Hey, I'm Amanda from Trifecta Fitness. We're proud to be Clarksville's new Get Fit headquarters. Trifecta Fitness is a state-of-the-art spin and strength training studio. Our spin studio is truly one of a kind in this area, complete with 20 state-of-the-art live fitness bikes and an incredible sound system. Our strength training is done in small groups of six or fewer, and all of our strength and spin classes are scalable for every level of experience. Come see us in the heart of Clarksville, just behind MAPCO at the corner of Old Trenton Road and Wilma Rudolph Boulevard. Call us for more info at 931-542-6265 or download our Trifecta Fitness app for a full list of upcoming classes.
All right. Man, welcome to the Misfit Nation show. Hey, without further ado, I just want to say this show is hosted by Rich LaMonica and myself, yours truly, RJ Bird. But today we don't have Rich LaMonica, so it'll still be a good show today. We have somebody good to bring on. I'm going to welcome our guest from Desert Combat Zones to a Battle Within, U.S. Army veteran John Lawyer, transformed from soldier to spiritual seeker. He acts as one of several guides for Kishar, a nonprofit online spiritual community for people to share their journey and explore their own unique spiritual path. John is an omnist and believes in the validity of great human thought from around the world and across time. He offers individual spiritual guidance and coaching services as part of the Kishar spiritual community. Without further ado, I'll bring on John Lawyer. What's up, my man? How you doing?
Good, RJ. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, man. It's my pleasure, man. I'm just excited to get this out to the world. And I know that everybody's going to find this a good show and very informative. I just want to ask you, man, first right off the bat, what led you here, man, from as far back you want to go up until now? What got you to this point?
Sure. I grew up in a small town in central Oklahoma. About 8,000 people, you know, pretty normal childhood growing up. And I knew that college probably wasn't for me as I went ahead. So I figure, you know, I was just going to enlist in the Army straight out of high school. That's what I did. That was in 2000. It was about a year before 9/11. And by the time I got through basic training, my job training, it was about 6 months in to my duty station before 9/11 happened. I was a counterintelligence special agent. And our unit's job was to essentially go to war with CENTCOM and provide intelligence support if anything ever happened. And obviously it did. So yeah. I spent about half my 5-year enlistment in Kuwait, about 2.5 years. They're supporting our stuff in Afghanistan, and then obviously the invasion of Iraq. You know, most of that happened from Kuwait, and then when I was, I mean, my enlistment was done. I wasn't ready to really get out of the job, so my wife and I, who had pretty much the same job that I did, we decided to keep doing the same thing as civilians, and went to Baghdad for about 18 months. And then I spent about 6.5 years in Kandahar, Afghanistan, and that was actually consecutive. So I guess I spent about 12 years out of the first 15 years of my adult life in and out of combat zones. And that kind of was like this whole life that I lived by the time I was in my mid-30s, you know. So it was a lot. And I, you know, you don't realize at the time because you're so busy, right? You probably relate to that. You know, you're in it, you're doing it. You know, you can kind of like objectively and abstractively know, like, oh, there's stuff going on around you that's kind of serious and impacting you, but you don't really accept that at the time. So, when I came home, I got home in 2015 from Afghanistan, and I was just kind of like burnt out and, you know, post-traumatic stress and anxiety, depression, all that stuff. And, you know, I didn't really have an identity outside of my job, outside of the you know, being at war. And, you know, people don't talk about it a lot, right? But war's exciting. It's adrenaline. It's it's this thing you can get addicted to in a way, being deployed, being overseas. So I kind of had to figure out who I was, like, who's John Lawyer outside of all that.
And
my wife was going through the same thing because she'd been there with me almost that whole time. So the good news is we understood each other. And the bad news is we were both kind of busted up, you know. So but we've been married for 20 years, and it took about 7 years after I came home to kind of get my feet under me and finally figure everything out. It was a lot of healing that needed to happen. And then one day, kind of out of the blue, I wasn't really on a spiritual path or expecting it, but I kind of had a moment where I was just like, oh, you know, it was like, hit me like a lightning bolt, like the oneness of the universe and that we're all connected and this very loving kindness kind of thing. And I knew that I kind of wanted to help people help themselves find their wholeness, whether they kind of saw it, because I think we're all whole inside, even if we can't see it. And And that moment changed my life. That was over 2 years ago now. And I've been working on that ever since.
Man, I can definitely relate to you. And man, your story sounds very similar to mine, man. You know, I was in Afghanistan, 2010, 11 timeframe. Okay. And it took me about 7 years too, you know? So, you know, to kind of get my feet up under me, which was about 2 years ago. So, I can really understand, man, like just spending that long moment of, because it starts off dark and then you think you see the light, and then you go back and forth with, you know, what's really going on, and the thing that you thought was going to be your entire life, you know, it wasn't. So you got to make the adjustments. You know, what led to, like, how did you, like, can you give any details on you finding your identity, you know, like, I know you said it, maybe it was just that aha moment, but just a little bit.
Yeah,
on
that. I think leading up to that, it was an aha moment, but I think there were some things that kind of informed me along the way that I didn't necessarily fully realize until later on. But like, I think I went to the VA and I had a therapist in the VA, and she was into Eastern medicine, like Eastern faith. She taught me mindfulness meditation and stuff like that. I got lucky. A lot of VA therapists aren't like that. So, so I got lucky to have a really great VA therapist. Her husband was a Vietnam vet. So she kind of knew PTSD from a very personal level. She's great. And, you know, I tell people, like, there's probably a good chance she saved my life, you know? And I wasn't able to wrap myself fully around mindfulness meditation and everything she was teaching me because I wasn't there yet. I wasn't ready for it. But it still helped me. Like, it still helped me start that change and start a path. I didn't realize I was on a journey yet, even though I was on a journey.
And it was exactly.
And then a couple years before I had my aha moment, I had a moment where I kind of was like, you know what? I'm always worried about stuff. I'm always worried about what's happening. I'm always worried about outcomes. I'm stressed about what's going to happen tomorrow and about bills and about this piece of job or this work or that work. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop caring. Man. And it wasn't a spiritual thing for me.
Yeah.
But I just was like, you know what? I don't care anymore. Like, it wasn't like I'm letting go of life, but I was just like, screw it. I don't care anymore.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, especially, you know, I mean, I don't want to say especially, but, you know, men can tend to, you know, we have that, we put a lot of that pressure on ourselves. You know, we want to take care of people around us. And you know, that can weigh in on us a lot. And so I definitely understand that journey, man. You said that it wasn't spiritual. What are your spiritual beliefs?
Well, now I call myself an omnist or universalist. It basically means I respect all religions, all philosophy, self-help, whatever you want to call it. You know, I respect all of it.
Yeah.
You know, I believe that we should all be able to stand together and practice our own individual spiritual faith next to each other, regardless of what our core beliefs are. Now, within that, I subscribe. I really like the universal nature of some of the Hindu practices and like the idea of Taoism and the balance of the universe, light and dark and the balance in between. I read a lot of stuff from different religions, and I let that kind of help inform my own spiritual practice all the way through the Abrahamic faith and like Christ consciousness and some of what the Christian mystics taught and stuff like that. I think it's all saying a lot of the same thing in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that can kind of give a little notion that, you know, there's oneness within that. And so that's good, man. Thanks for sharing that. So, you know, you're this Kishar spiritual community, right? You know, I have some questions that I want to ask you, and I'm sure. Very scripted because, you know, man, this is my first time driving a wheel, but you are saying so many good things that I'll probably end up asking you some questions outside of that. But I mean, can you tell us, you have this Kishar spiritual community, like, first, where did that name come from? Like, what's the origin of that name? And then you can tell us about the community itself.
Sure. Yeah. Name. I always thought the name is really important, right? Like, everybody likes to think about what the name. So it's the Sumerian goddess of Mother Earth. So like Gaia. And I really appreciate that. And then it also has a dual meaning. It also means the line on the horizon, which I think encapsulates that journey we're all on, that, you know, we're all kind of walking towards the horizon. We may never get there, but we got to enjoy the journey along the way, right?
Yeah.
And the community itself, you know, I felt very strongly when I kind of had my moment. I said, there's got to be a place for like authentic, meaningful connection in the digital age where we can talk to each other and have great conversations, just like you and I are talking right now over, you know, hundreds of miles or thousands of miles or whatever. And why can't I, you know, create a place like that where people can kind of find their own way and help each other out. And we don't have to all believe the same thing to kind of hang out, ask questions, have discussions, and do it in a place that's not some giant technical organization like Facebook or Instagram. It's something smaller, something warmer, you know, that kind of thing. And so I said, I'm going to go out and try to make this happen. And I worked every day after that to make it happen.
Man, that's good. You know, I during a spiritual journey that I had, you know, I ended up finding out about Reiki, and I was like, yeah, man. And I was just so skeptical of it because I'm like, I have a spiritual belief, you know, but I found out that you, whatever your belief is, you know, you can intertwine that if you like, you know, and so or it can be completely separate, you know, but I like what was missing was the community, right? And the community is what keeps you on that journey, because I think of it, like you said, like the horizon, right? You know, we're all walking towards that horizon, but, you know, sometimes when the sun is like right there on that line, it's cloudy and the sun isn't there. And you might have those dark, cloudy days where you feel like, which way is the horizon? Which way do I go? And you might find yourself wandering or lost. But the sun is always there. It's always there. Yeah. It's just that there's just you know, a cloud there that's blocking the way. But when you have a community, you know, you have some people who might be more experienced and say, hey, I know that it's this way, regardless if there's clouds or not, just keep going. You got it. We got it. And so that's great that you have a community where no matter how far, how, you know, spread apart you are, you know, you can find a connection with somebody to help you along the journey. I love that, man.
Yeah, thanks. I love your description of that. That's a perfect way to describe it. The sun's always there, even if we don't see it. And our community around us can help remind us of that. I really appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I like that. So you're a spiritual seeker, but also a spiritual guide and a spiritual coach, right? What kind of people or who might, you know, benefit? I know you do is one-on-one coaching.
I do one-on-one spiritual guidance and coaching. And for me, I think most people can benefit from aligning their mind, body, and soul. Like even if you're a driven professional and you're, you know, really dedicated to your job, or you're a stay-home parent or anybody in between, I think if we're able to figure out what spirituality means to us, and it's going to mean something different to every one of us, then we're more in touch with ourselves. We're more in touch with our higher purpose. We're more in touch with all these things. And then that makes us more joyful, happy people. And if we're taking care of ourselves and with that self-love, then all the people around us are going to benefit from that. They're going to be happier. They're going to be in a better place. So we're, you know, when we lift ourselves up, we lift up the whole world around us. So I think anybody can benefit from figuring out what their spirituality is, what it means to them, where they want to go with it, and how they can then integrate that in their day-to-day lives. I'm very interested in that intersection between our spiritual path and the day-to-day real world, you know, that, you know, we walk through every day with all these other people, and we, you know, most of us aren't going to go live in a monastery out in the Himalayas. So we got to figure out how to live it, you know?
Yep. Yep. Man, we all have our, you know, huge mountain to climb, each and every one of us, which is what, like you said, which makes, you know, everyone has that, you know, your spiritual oneness is individualized to you. Man, that's good, man. I like that you talked about self-love, man. You know, I've been through a type of, you know, journey where, you know, self-love looks like selfishness to others, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any advice on how people can, you know, navigate, you know, defining that thin line between selfishness and self-love?
I do, I think, have a little bit of advice. I think our society teaches us to love others first, to help others, to be that hero for everybody else. I think in the military, we're taught that times two.
Absolutely.
But really, I think we have to stop and say, but really, like, if I'm not good for myself, if I'm not okay, I mean, I can't help other people out as well as I could as if I was taking care of myself. If I'm not okay, people are going to sense that. It's all, you know, we're not going to have the same positive energy. People will feel, you know, feel energy, right? So when our energy's down, if we're not up, people are going to feel that. We see that when someone walks into a room, they can change the energy of that room in a better or worse way.
That's great.
And we see that in conference rooms and briefing rooms around the world every day. We got to take care of ourselves.
This is why I like that you said that, you know, the one-on-one coaching is for everyone from the highest executive to, you know, the mom and the dad, everybody in between, because we all have our journeys. But like you said, you know, we can feel that energy from each individual. And you know, I always wondered, I went to get my audio engineering degree back in 2003, 2004, and we had to study wavelengths and, you know, EQing and things like that. And I got a chance to kind of understand sonic waves, right? And that's just energy, right? And I always wondered before I went to the military, like, why did I didn't even use that degree. Why did I do, you know, go through that? But that tool was meant for me decades later to understand energy. And when there's low vibration and when there's high, you know, high frequencies and low frequencies, and how we are connected, you know, with these frequencies and how they help us too. You know, there's a bunch of frequencies that help us, you know, binaurally and there's laterally, right? And so it's so much that was taught to me and to that I carried on and didn't use it until decades later. So, but yeah, energy is a big thing. It's much, you know, a lot of people think like, oh man, this person's got good energy. And we say it on surface level, but it is a lot of deep understanding to be had there. So I appreciate you bringing it up. So what happened, but maybe give us some insight on your time in the desert and what helped like you now on your spiritual path.
Yeah, I really appreciate my time overseas for all those years. It was hard, like looking back, you know, it was difficult. I look back, I was working like 100, 110 hours a week.
Yeah. You
know, like 7 days a week, right? Like,
yep.
I don't know how we did it, right?
I don't know either, man.
Like years at a time. And, you know, one, it taught me taught me that there's this like great strength inside all of us. Like there's, you know, we can do so much. It taught me about relationships and even, you know, the power of kindness. I had a guy come up to me once in Afghanistan and, you know, we would get new special agents in every 6 months. Mm. And I was always there because I was there for so long. Yeah. They would come, and I was kind of in charge of some of them a bit, you know. And they would say, what do you most look for in a new agent when they come in? And I was like, that's an interesting question. And I really thought about that. I was like, you know what? About a couple minutes later, I was like, it's kindness. If you're a nice person, if you're kind, I can teach you to protect yourself. I can teach you to go help protect others, which was our job. We were in charge of protecting Kandahar Airfield. And, you know, I kindness, even in the middle of war, it really always struck me as this really important thing, that brotherhood and sisterhood of everything. Right.
Yep.
And that, you know, like our unit was really interesting because our mission was to protect the airbase. We weren't very well funded or equipped for it.
Story of my life.
She's going to relate to that too, right? And so, you know, we did stuff that was way outside our mandate. We did stuff that was way outside of our mission. And we just got stuff done. I mean, and you know, we used to tell people too, when stuff went wrong outside or on the base, we were like, guys, we're your first phone call. Like, you got to call us. We'll solve your problems. Like,
yeah.
So we got stuff done. Like, so I got stuff done and that was a great feeling. It was extremely rewarding experience in a lot of ways. There's a lot of darkness there. But it was also a rewarding experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my time, some of my time there, man. And you're right, man. There's a lot of dark moments, man. And, but the little bit of, you know, kindness, love that you get and brotherhood, sisterhood that you get, it really takes you bounds over what you're dealing with, you know? You know, it's kind of like, you know, we go back to that, the sun always there in the clouds, right? You know, sometimes the sun peeps through, especially if you live in the near Florida, it might be cloudy for a little bit and rain for 2 seconds, but the sun peeps out, and that's that little bit of kindness or a little love you might sense over there that kind of give you hope for a sunny day.
Yeah. You know? And I look back, and one thing that I did and another friend of mine, we always made sure that our unit was having fun. Like even in the midst of all the stuff, like, and all the darkness, we always made sure that our guys were having fun. And it sounds weird in war. Right. But like, I think that was one of the reasons our unit was as successful as they were, and that we were able to do what we did for so long, is because we made sure that people found that joy, even in the middle of a desert or a swamp.
Yep. Yeah, man, I can give plenty of stories on that, man. Yeah. But you know, Rich, he was my NCO in Afghanistan, man. And we called ourselves the Misfits, and that's where the Misfit Nation come from, man. I always tell Rich, like, man, I feel like we were all the castaways, kind of like the Misfits in that Christmas cartoon, clay TV, or I guess cartoon that we used to see as a child, man, and all the misfit toys were just the thrown away toys that nobody wanted, you know, and I felt like we were all that, you know, but we had a connection, a brotherhood, and, you know, we knew how to have fun and moments that, you know, could have been taken, you know, to the point of us to down and depressionness, you know, but we were able to kind of figure it out, you know, storm through it, get through it, push and come together and provide happiness in moments that we could, man. We took advantage of every moment of creating happiness for sure. Yeah, Claymation. Yeah, that's what it was, Rich. Yeah, Rich mentioned in the comments. It's called Claymation, the Island of the Misfit Toys. That's it. Yep. So, yeah, man. I want to ask you a few more questions, man. What is so important, man? I want you to share with the people here, man. What's important about living your higher purpose? And I can think you call it your dharma. Is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah, dharma. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I spent a lot of time on this with people. I believe that we each have a unique higher purpose, which I call dharma, you know, like kind of a Hindu term. And I think that our higher purpose can change over our lifetime.
Yeah.
And I think if we don't know what our higher purpose is, we should definitely find that out. And if people don't know what it is, you probably have an idea, an essence of it. Think about, what do you love to do? What do you want to do so much that you can't wait to go to sleep and wake up and do it again tomorrow? You know, that's probably getting close to what your higher purpose is. And if you know what your higher purpose is, how do you then align your higher purpose so that you're living it every day? How do you align that with your life, your day to day? How do you align that higher purpose or dharma with your job? Are you doing a job that is in line with your higher purpose? Because we spend so much time working that if we're not aligned with that, then we're going to be out of whack, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, it's about people living the way that they were meant to live, you know? And I think that's a great message from a lot of different philosophies. You know, it goes all the way back to, you know, 4,000 years ago with the Vedic literature and the Bhagavad Gita with the Hindus. And that's what it's all about.
Man, that sounds like another language, but but that's some good, at least that last part. But that was really good, man. I really like how you said that, you know, we really do have an idea of our higher purpose. But have you ever gotten like a question of like, what if your purpose or what you really want to do isn't something that makes a lot of money, you know? And that's just like, you know, people kind of, they struggle with weighing that out. It's like, this is what I really love to do. This is what I enjoy. But if you go and look that up on, you know, Indeed or something,
it's not there.
It's either not there or the pay is not so good. Do you find that, you know, where you're coaching and people are asking that question, where they're struggling?
Man, I love that question. Yes, I do get asked that question. And I love that question. And the answer is, and I'll go into more detail, but the first answer is, it's complicated.
Please do.
You know, that's the first answer. It's complicated.
Yeah.
But when you go beyond that, you have to take a look at it and say, okay, if I know this is my higher purpose, but I can't make money doing it, I don't know how to make money doing it. Well, one, start figuring out how that can happen. That's first thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, what's the cost of not living that purpose for you in terms of how happy and content you are in life? And if you have other obligations, if you have children, if you have spouse, you know, other family or whatever, what's the impact on them if you're not living your higher purpose? If you're not living your higher purpose and your dharma, are you okay enough with that where you're still going to be happy and fulfilled and taking care of those around you? Or is it going to impact them too, in addition to impacting you? So I think you have to look at it from that perspective.
Man, that's
great. some people may say, I'm making a six-figure income. It's not what I want to be doing, but it gives me time in my spare time. And it gives me freedom to go do what I want to do. And that's okay. So there's balance, right?
Balance. So
I think you have to look at it kind of in this holistic manner of, is the combination of what's going on in my life allowing my higher purpose to flourish in a way that is consistent with my beliefs and values and all of that.
Man, You know, so when somebody say, you know, something that is so profound, I usually end it with saying bars, right? You just spit a whole bar of just profoundness, man. You know, I've been in I might have to come check you out myself, man. I mean, you know, I think, you know, I'm vulnerable enough to stand here on this or sit here on this platform and say, hey, you know, we all don't have it figured out, one. And two, I'm not too good to say, hey, I need help, right? Because, I mean, I don't know anyone who has done anything alone. And so I think that's some good stuff, man. Like, just finding that balance. Sometimes you can do what makes you your six figures, and then and then that gives you the freedom or the liberty to do what you're passionate about. And then sometimes you can just make it happen because the cost of not doing it may outweigh you taking that smaller pay or whatever, you know? So, because you just never know once you start doing it, you know, you just never know where it takes you. If it's your calling or your purpose, man, it could take you anywhere if you just, you know, just stay consistent. And I tell people all the time in my classes when I'm coaching, I'm like, you know, consistency is not perfect attendance, right?
Right.
And so it's just doing more of what's getting you towards your goal than what doesn't get you towards your goal. So, man, weighing the cost of not doing it, man, that's detrimental right there, man. So many people, you know, lie in depression and anxiety because they're not operating in their purpose. So,
yeah, absolutely. No, and yeah. You have some wise words there as well. So I definitely appreciate that.
Oh, man. I told Rich, man, when I saw a little bit about you, man, I was like, man, I'm a little nervous about this being my first one, man, but I think this is going to be a great conversation because I think he and I may be able to relate, and especially since serving in Afghanistan too. Were you there in 2010, 2011?
Yeah, I was there from 2008 to the end of 2014.
Oh, yeah. So I was in RC South. So
I was in Kandahar.
Kandahar, yes. Yeah, so you was like a good hour away, 45 minutes away.
Yeah, where were you guys?
We were in,
Zabul or?
Nah. Rich might get on here and say.
Like Panjway, Zari?
Nope. It was a blackout cop. So,
gotcha.
Why can't I remember the name of it? They changed the name too. A couple of Bob Wilson. There it is. Rich helped me out.
Okay, Wilson. I got you. I know where that is. Yeah, yep. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, it was a five. Yeah. Yeah, man, I tell you, man, a lot of my memory on that, man, is like zoned out and it's in and out. And I can remember here and there, man. But we were there. We was like right up the road from each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Small world, right?
Yeah. Jake wants to know when you were in Baghdad.
I was in Baghdad from the fall of 2005 through early 2007. So it was a pretty turbulent time, and it was right as we were leaving, it was getting worse and worse the whole time that we were there. It was a pretty interesting time in Baghdad.
Yeah. There you go, Jake. He was in Baghdad, man, during that time. So man, listen, I just want to, Jake said he was there at that time. So there it is. You guys probably cross paths at some point, but, I want to ask, man, where, like, do you have a website that you can share or?
Sure. Our main site is kishar.org. That's KISHAR.org. And that's the entrance to our community. And that's where our one-on-one spiritual guidance and coaching is available. We have links to a social media. We have a pretty cool YouTube channel, all that kind of stuff. So definitely hit us up. All proceeds go back into the nonprofit to help the members, and we don't take salary or anything like that. So,
yeah. Oh, nice. Okay. Is there anywhere that people can find you on social media or anything?
Yeah, most of our tags are at Keyshar Spiritual. Okay. Get us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Threads, anywhere.
Okay. At Keyshar Spiritual, man. Hey, man. So, man, it's been a great talk. I want to ask you, you have any like final words or anything you want to share with anybody? Or
I would just tell people we have more time than we think. Slow it down a little bit. Don't chase perfection. And love yourself like we were talking about. Love yourself.
Man, that is amazing, man. You got me over here just just thinking about, you know, just like we have more time than we think. And I can put a lot on my plate, man.
Yeah,
true. And so I think that's pretty good, man. But I just want to say to you, man, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure. Just want you to know, man, that you are a light, man. Just keep going, man. Keep spreading your light, man, and sharing with the world. And you have a good night, man.
Yeah, and thanks for all that you guys do on the show and the message that you guys put out every week. I definitely appreciate that as well.
No doubt. All right, John, thanks for being on the show. To everybody else, peace out.
This message is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Did you serve in the military? If so, you can obtain a free lifetime pass to more than 2,000 federal recreation sites. These sites are located across more than 400 million acres of public lands, including national parks, wildlife refuges, and forests. The lands host activities to fit any lifestyle: hiking, biking, fishing, camping, and much more. Gold Star families are also eligible for these free lifetime passes. Plus, they cover entrance fees for a driver and all passengers in a car, or up to 3 additional adults at sites that charge per person. Obtaining one is easy. Just go to the National Park Service website, nps.gov, or the National Park Service app.
Thanks for checking us out and being a part of the Misfit Nation show. Don't forget to visit our website at themisfitnation.com. That's themisfitnation.com. Check out all our past episodes and get some of the great Misfit Nation gear for you and your family. As always, be humble, stay hungry, and keep hustling, because we are
Misfit Nation. Misfit Nation.